Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector in Chicago, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you'd like to hear more episodes of this show or any of the Pet Talk radio shows I co-host with experts, please go to RadioPetLady.com and visit the podcast libraries. The Expert Vet is a production of Pet Media, Inc. and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content. I also produce the Dog Film Festival, which celebrates the love between dogs and their people and the rescue groups that bring them together. Sponsored by a grant from the Petco Foundation, the festival is traveling across the country. You can find more information on the website, dogfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you with the generous support of Halo, holistic, natural dog and cat foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes like Vigor give you even more healthy choices for your pet's dinner, while Daily Greens brings vitamins and digestive enzymes into your dog's diet. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com for pets awaiting their forever homes. Dr. Donna, cat pee. Cat pee is like one of the biggest issues out there.
Yes.
We need help. Urinary tract issues. People get rid of their kitties because of things that could be managed differently. I'm sure you see lots of people come in with a cat and say, I'm done. I'm done with this cat. And you're like, what is the problem? So, you know, you've said to me it's one of the top five reasons that people relinquish is the polite word for they ditch their cats.
And it's,
and it's just a cat just trying to pee, just trying to have a natural life.
Right. So let me just use a personal anecdote here.
Okay, good.
So I was at the clinic last week and I came in to view the patients in the back, and there was this gorgeous, gorgeous Seal Point Siamese cat back there. And he's about, you know, 6-7 years old. And I said, well, what's he doing here? Because he looked like he was not, like, boarding or staying there. And they're like, oh, well, the owner's got a new kitten. They adopted a new kitten, and this one started peeing all over the house and all over everything, so they've gotten rid of him.
Oh, my God.
And I just –
oh, my
exactly
God.
What I said. I was like, you've got to be kidding. They're like, no, they've tried – they're at their wit's end. They've tried things for months, and nothing's working, so they're going to get rid of him.
Wow.
And, I mean, that's just like a recent personal, and I just am flabbergasted, right? I mean, you just can hardly believe it. But
it leaves you speechless because
it is such a horrible thing because, you know, cats with inappropriate urination doesn't sound so bad. You know, let's talk about what it really looks like. It's a cat peeing on your pillow, on your shoes, all over the house, in the sink. You know, you step somewhere and boop, cat pee. They howl. They're painful. They're, you know, it is truly a terrible, you know, a terrible thing. You know, there are many, many names for this syndrome is what we're going to call it. A lot of people have heard of like idiopathic cystitis or feline lower urinary tract disease, fluted. You know, a lot of people call it fluted. And it's really tempting to think of it as a simple bladder disease. However, it is really, really more complicated than that. You know, what we're talking about is these are the cats that the most common signs are the cats that have painful urination. They're squirting out little tiny blips of pee. There's blood in the urine. They're inappropriately, you know, marking or urinating around the house. This is the disease that we're talking about. But research in the last several years have proven that this condition, it results from a very complicated interaction between the bladder, the nerves that innervate the bladder, and the stress hormones. It's been found that cats that have excess stress, and I'm going to put that in quotations because what does that mean for a cat?
Right.
We have to talk about. Cats that have excess stress in their environment have an overproduction essentially of like adrenaline and other stress hormones. And what happens is cats that are predisposed, it causes a lot of excess nerve input to the bladder, and that results in a leaky, inflamed sort of bladder wall. So then all these like proteins enter the bladder wall and into the urine, and that changes the nature of their urine. Crystals can form. There's mucus in there. There's all this sort of crap that's in there, all these inflammatory cells and mucus and crystals coming from all this excess nerve input, and boom, they have these clinical signs. And in the worst case scenario, that stuff can accumulate into a plug, which can get stuck
right.
in the urethra, which we commonly call a urethral obstruction. But even if a cat is lucky enough not to obstruct themselves, it's still the same thing. There's too much stress. There's too much nerve input. The bladder becomes leaky, and all this stuff is happening, and it's very painful to them, and that's why they're having these signs.
So although it's a temperament issue and a management issue to bring a young kitten into a house where you've had a cat for 6 years,
yes.
and the Cat Bible and Dr. Hodgkin's book, Your Cat, both talk about the very, very, very slow introduction of a new cat into a household, lasting weeks, if not months. You don't just plunk a new cat down,
right.
least of all a new kitten who can be particularly bothersome to an adult cat. They're just,
right.
you know, little torture machines.
Right.
So the cat could be marking simply to mark the territory as, this is mine, get away, this is mine, get away.
Or it could be related to the
yes,
stress syndrome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the
and
stress,
let me just tell you, this syndrome, we'll call it this idiopathic cystitis, it affects between 250 and 500,000 cats per year in the United States.
And people aren't even aware of it. They think, well, the cat will get used to the kitten. Meanwhile,
right.
its body is in a complete inflammatory state, freaking out. And it's peeing hither and yon because pressure and pain in the bladder is
mm-hmm.
making it think, oh, my God, I got to pee right now. Oh,
right,
right now. Oh,
right.
right now.
Right.
And then hardly any pee comes out. And the people don't understand what has set this in motion. They think they've just got a, quote, unquote, broken cat. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about how to, if there's a way to undo that inflammation or to help protect our kitties from that mental stress in the first place. We'll be
mm-hmm.
right back. This show is brought to you with the generous support of Woruva, a family-owned pet food company named after their rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva's owners want to feed their own pets and yours with ingredients that are good enough for people to eat, using the same care, ingredients, and facilities where they make food for people. You can find pouches and cans of their cats in the kitchen, their more economical BFF, best feline friend, and all varieties of Woruva for dogs wherever fine natural pet foods are sold. We are also supported by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets in New York City that can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom-flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or a liquid that your pet will actually like. And Best Pet RX will keep trying formulations at no extra charge and offers same-day delivery in New York City and overnight delivery anywhere else so that your pet can happily take the medicine she needs to get well and stay well. So, Dr. Donna, if one of the main reasons that people give up their cats is because of this inappropriate elimination, they're peeing everywhere, all kinds of different places, and people go, oh, they're mad, oh, it's spite, all kinds of things which are not even in the emotional dictionary of a cat. In fact, the cat is in some sort of an emotional state probably that's caused this problem.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we lower stress for a cat? We know that in shelters, cats can get very sick, upper respiratory disease,
mm-hmm.
solely from stress.
Right.
So if we know that lower, you know, that's upper respiratory,
mm-hmm.
this is lower
right.
urinary, what do we do to keep our cats mellow?
Right. So, again, let's talk about what are the true risk factors for this disease. So the biggest, the most significant thing is, you know, changes within the house in the last 3 months, a pet owner who dies,
right.
a move, an introduction of a new pet, that's a huge risk factor for this disease. Cats who are in multi-cat households.
Right.
Because cats are solo creatures. They're not like dogs with packs. Cats are a solo creature.
Yep.
So multi-cat households, even though I hear clients all the time, oh, he loves him. He grooms him all the time. They groom each other. They love each other. But there is still some inherent stress to,
right.
like, cohabitating with another cat,
yep.
or five cats. Same is true with a multi-pet household. If you've got a dog, again, even if Muffy loves the cat, the fact is a dog is always looked at as a bit of a threat. I mean, there
yes.
is always a little bit of, like, on guard, son. You know, we're
yes.
just looking out for you.
Yes.
Ad lib feeding of dry food, as we know, the dry food can be an issue. Low water intake. So cats that, you know, the cats, I always call them like desert camels. They don't ever drink. You know, they take very low amounts of water in. So, and then obesity. So these are big risk factors. You're obese. You live in a multi-cat household. There are other significant stressors in the house. You eat dry food, come and go.
Right.
Not drinking a stitch of water. So these are combinations of local bladder things as well as the stress things. So I will tell you, the two biggest things that have been proven to be benefit to these cats, one is increasing water intake. Easy peasy, right? Let's change to an all canned cat food.
Yep.
That is something that, you know, is good for them and so for so many reasons, but it definitely increases their water intake. In addition to canned food, I mean, you can soup up the canned food with
right.
extra water, go with free-flowing water fountains, you know, put different sized bowls around. You know, some cats love really wide rim. They can, like, partially submerge their feet. They like that. Some cats don't like their whiskers to touch the sides of the bowl. So, you know, some experimentation of, like, bowl sizes.
I had a friend whose cat would only drink out of a particular kind of, like, crystal-type water
right.
glass, human well, water glass. That's how she had to serve it.
Right, and a lot of cats are really attracted to a small drip from the faucet.
Yes.
They'll play in it. They'll drink it. They'll, you know, ice chips. You know, so and at some point, if you've got a really severely affected cat and they refuse to drink enough, we can give those cats fluids under the skin. You know, I mean, that's
the way
like
you do
the
it with
most,
a kidney disease cat.
Yeah, the way you do with a kidney disease cat. This isn't kidney disease, but yes, that I mean, so there are ways we can say you're going to have more water if we need to.
Right.
But then, so increasing the water intake. So that's a huge thing. Even just to give you an idea of this disease is associated with a really high recurrence rate. Once it starts, 50% of cats are going to have another episode
wow.
within the next 6 to 12 months. Just going to canned food alone from dry food
right.
can reduce the incidence by up to 40%. Just that. As if you do nothing else except just change to canned food, then you can even decrease recurrence significantly.
Because those of you who've listened to Cat Chat and Dr. Don and me talk about this issue of no more kitty crack, i.e. no dry food of any kind, of any brand, no grain, no this, no that, it's still dry food and very dehydrating to the cat. The canned food, when Donna said it's taking in more water, it's because it's so much moisture already, and you can soup it up with a little more water.
Mm-hmm.
So that solves
that alone,
a lot of problems right,
right
there.
Right.
You know, it's funny because you say this recurrence. Well, sure, because if the five things you talked about don't change,
right?
Right? The cat's still on dry food. The cat's still stressed by other pets and
right.
other cats. And change in the environment, if all those things are still ongoing,
right.
of course it's going to happen again because you didn't solve any of the underlying problems, right?
Right. So then this becomes then the biggest thing.
Right.
It's called memo. Did you get the memo? And I always like to say that. The fancy name is multimodal environmental enrichment. Okay?
Love
so
it.
So what that means is, you know, obviously one of the risk factors is a cat who lives strictly indoors. Well, we know that living indoors is a good thing because you're less exposed to cars and traffic and infectious diseases and feline leukemia. You know, there are so many
sure.
benefits to indoor life, but we plop a cat inside and then we don't do anything except maybe give it a couple toys.
Yes.
And they are different creatures. You know, they need an enriched environment. You know, and people are probably familiar with this with zoo animals. You know, zoos now, whether you agree or disagree, but they are trying to enrich the environment
yes.
of these captive animals. And cats are no different. They would like to be outside.
Yes.
Consider them a captive animal.
Right.
So enriching their environment. And that includes minimizing potential stress from if you have a household dog. Make sure you give your cat lots of spaces to go up. It can get
right.
up onto a perch. It can
right.
watch the dog from its perch way up high, you know, and or from, you know, I had a client once that had parrots, and the cat was so stressed out by these parrots.
Oh.
And, you know, so you never know what's going to constitute stress. But if there are housemate cats, housemate dogs, other creatures, turtles, parrots, you name it, you know, trying to minimize potential stress from those things. And then there is litter box management. We always say the 1+1 rule. If
right.
you have one cat, you have two boxes. If you have two cats, you have three boxes. Five cats, you have six boxes. I mean, it's always 1+1. However many cats plus one more set of resources. The litter box, changing litter types. Many of these cats
right.
that are affected prefer a clumping, unscented litter. But just, you know, there's a lot of trial and error about what's going to help this cat help enrich its environment. The other is where you put these litter boxes. So it's very common for litter boxes to be out of the way. They're in the laundry room. They're near the washer and dryer. They're next to
They're in the basement.
Vent. They're in the vent, the furnace vent that comes on, and like the cat's in there doing its business, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, like the vent comes on. And
yes.
So it sounds silly, but those are actually some stressful things. Ample resources for the cat. So not only the litter boxes, but scratching posts, both vertical, horizontal, kitty perches, condos, you know, no perceived threats during eating and drinking. You know, it's simple stuff, but it's hard to do it. I mean, you turn into like a crazy cat person, like supplying your house. I personally always recommend, if you've got one of those cats that sits by the door, the slider, the window, chatters at the birds outside, I try to get those cats outside for at least 15 to 20 minutes of supervised outdoor time on a leash or in a confined space, a fence, you know, somehow that they're supervised.
Yep.
But again, that is enrichment to them, you know, that they can like get out in the grass if they want to. They can, you know, just watching a cat out in that environment is so cool. They often just really love it.
You see a completely different aspect of their personality. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about catios and the use of them depending on the climate you're in, and also the health monitor litter, which is an interesting development that is a way to see if your cat is producing enough pee and maybe catch problems before they turn into this syndrome. We'll be right back.
The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test to determine which elements in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. Spot Platinum can detect allergies for which they can make a USDA-approved oral spray custom-tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon.
Dr. Donna, you talked about the environmental enrichment aspect of letting cats go outdoors. A lot of people have created something called a catio, which is a fully enclosed with some kind of wire mesh area that has some, maybe a log in it or something the cat can climb up on or some perches.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you find or research has shown really decreases the urinary problems in kitties?
Yes, absolutely. This as a part of multimodal environmental enrichment is huge. Yeah, the people who are really into this as far as in the veterinary world, you know, it's the first thing they say is creating some sort of space for them, you know, punching out a porch on the side of the house.
Yes.
Or so, you know, I mean, to really give them, you know, you all know if you have a cat like that. They're the ones that sit next to the door.
Right.
Like, when the door opens, they're on high alert. They come running from wherever they are. You know, those are the ones that are particularly going to benefit from it, but surprisingly, many, many do.
And really appreciate it. There's a health monitor litter that Dr. Elsie came up with. It's a little bit labor intensive, but it's pretty clever. It comes with a measure, a weight, so you can measure the weight of the litter. And by measuring the weight, the output of the wet clumped litter, you can see if your cat is producing enough urine. Because if the weight of that litter goes down, it's usually for cats that have kidney disease. But, of course, any cat is, in theory, at risk of getting kidney disease for the reasons we've talked about or urinary tract problems. If the quantity of pee that's being produced goes down, it means something's not right, because you want to have a steady amount of it, and then you could go to your vet and look into the situation before it becomes inflammatory or you get a blockage.
Right.
So that's another tool to be used.
And
to,
I think it would
head off problems.
It would be particularly useful, although we haven't talked a lot about these cats that develop the most severe form of the disease, which is a blockage.
Yes.
But once they've had a blockage, when they come home back into the home environment, to really monitor how much urine they're making.
Exactly.
It would be really valuable, particularly in that situation, because that is a, it's a critical time, and it's very difficult to monitor urine output in a cat, you know, especially
because
you're trying not to stress them out by like hanging over the box. And so,
you're not going to catch every time that they pee.
Right.
It's a clever idea, and Dr. Elsie has a feline-only practice, so he doesn't have time to think about many more things than cat pee. I'll see if they're able to send you some samples of it to try in the clinic. Before we finish up, talk about your expanded role in the clinic that you are a board-certified internist in Chicago, the name of it and where it is, because people listening haven't really had access to you and anyone in the Chicago area. Now you are increasing the amount of time you spend there, making you more accessible to the lucky people in Chicago. So tell a little bit about the clinic.
Yes, as you know, my true passion remains with clients and patients, and so I've made the decision to go back more into the clinic. So I'm working, three days a week now there, because it's, hard to balance all the different things you got going on. It's called the Animal Medical Center at Fort Sheridan.
Okay.
And it's in the city of Highwood, which is a northern suburb of Chicago. And just for anybody looking for the number, it's 847-926. Now that 9400, isn't that funny? But we are a bit of a boutique practice. There are general practitioners there. So the main group at the hospital is, there are general vets that do, the typical,
everyday
vaccine titers
health,
and the health visits and this and that. But, I have access to endoscopy and ultrasound. There's also a board certified surgeon that visits the practice on an as needed basis. It is not a 24-hour clinic, so we still work closely with a local emergency clinic for overnight care if we need it. But we're able to do a lot of different treatments and things there for, and it's nice because it's not as high pace and stress as some of the emergency or specialty clinics, and I really love it for that,
It's very important for people when they have a problem and they need a board-certified internist to get to the bottom of it. But it's not an emergency. Going to the emergency facilities that often have board certified specialists like you can be stressful because most of the people there, their animals in critical condition, and often the animals are dying or they have to be put to sleep. And every time I've gone, there's people crying in the waiting room.
Right. It's very
animals,
stressful.
It's very really stressful. So if you are lucky enough to be in the Chicago area, Dr. Spector is at the Animal Medical Center at Fort Sheridan, and you get to go and see her.
Yeah, but just one more quick thing. Do we have a couple more minutes?
Sure.
Because we have in some ways simplified feline urinary tract problems, because what we're talking about is the disease that affects 70% of cats. Okay.
Right.
If you have a cat who's like doing all this stuff and howling and inappropriate urination and this and that, 70% of the cats are going to be covered by what we just talked about. But that leaves 30% that are something different. So that means, cats get bladder stones. So about 20% of cats get bladder stones. They can have other things going on in the bladder. Interestingly enough, in cats that are less than 10 years of age, which is when mostly this disease happens, less than 2% of the time is it going to be due to a urinary tract infection. And it is so common for people to say, oh, my cat's straining, it must have an UTI.
Yes.
It doesn't. If it's less than 10 years old, chances are it does not have a UTI. If we go with odds, it has this stress bladder disease going on and requires multimodal treatment.
And antibiotics is not one of them. Dr. Hodgkins on Cat Chat says the same thing. This routine dispensing of antibiotics when there's no infection present doesn't deal with the underlying problem and just wastes the antibiotics.
Right. And it's not leading to antibiotic resistant issues.
Exactly.
So, and there are a lot of other treatments that, again, we didn't have quite enough time to touch on, like pheromone therapy, things to calm down.
Yes, the feel away. Comfort zone works like a dream.
And there are drug therapies that if we end up getting into these cats who are really stressed out and really anxious cats, or they're having multiple recurrences, we use sometimes like they do in people, tricyclic antidepressants.
Yes.
We use things to help. There are strategies to deal with these cats, because most of these 70% of cats that are, that have this disease, they are going to recur. And our goal is, it's not curable, but it is manageable. And we try, in each cat, some cats will be managed with just a few small changes. In some cats, you throw the whole gamut at them and medication, and they're still going to have some mild recurrences throughout life. So it's a wide range of disease presentation. I mean, it's from mildly affected to very severely affected. And so, you know, I just want to make sure that it's maybe not as simple as we've made it seem.
No, but it needs to be looked at by a veterinarian, and right. You need to come up with solutions that are specific to exactly what is going on with that cat. And the solution for that beautiful seal point Siamese is not to send him to the vet and go find him a new home.
Right.
Because no one feels good about that, least of all the cat. But people right. have loved their cat for 6 years, and they can't take the pee on the clean folded laundry in the basket. But really, there is a solution to that. So please don't despair.
Right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dr. Donna. Thank you all for listening.
You're welcome.